So, David and Goliath, 1 Samuel chapter 17. Let's go through this. Now, just so you know, 1 Samuel 17 is a long chapter. Oh, yeah, and I also had some, I went online and I picked up some David and Goliath pictures. I thought some of these were pretty cool. Isn't that right? Do I start off with the David Goliath pictures? Oh, it's not really that good. Yeah, you got the big dude with his, yeah, sorry over there, yellow hair, got little David. Yeah, good sling. That's a good little cartoon. Then you got this one right here. Yeah, that's a pretty big dude right there. Again, it's not completely accurate because we find out that Goliath actually is armed from head to toe. And also, Goliath doesn't carry a shield. Did you know that? He doesn't have a shield. He actually has one dude responsible for carrying his own shield. That's kind of crazy. What do we got here? I love this one. Later on, Goliath is going to chop off his head. I think that's kind of cool. Yeah. Yeah. So some of them can be kind of humorous. Some of them can actually be kind of poignant. I found this one. I thought this, that's a David and Goliath. But I think probably my favorite of all times. That's a great picture. All right. 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17. Here we go. Now, the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soko in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes-Damim between Soko and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another with the valley between them. You can actually go there to this day and actually walk in the valley of Elah. Be careful when you do... Yeah, oh, you've been there, yeah. Be careful when you do a quick internet search on Valley of Elah. It was actually a movie a little while ago. Did you know that? Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones, he actually got nominated for an Academy Award. Susan Sarandon. Yeah, we're not going to make any comments there. Valley of Elah. But there are some pictures of what the Valley of Elah looks like. Now, this is taken from one hill. Imagine you're standing on one hill. This would be the other hill that is being stood on. This next picture is from this vantage point backwards to this hill. Sorry, it's a little... This is a great... Here's one hill, and here's another hill. And right in the middle, you can't see it really well there, but there is an actual stream. Here's a picture of the stream. It's all dried up, yeah. Does it have lots of rocks? I'm sure when I went on and I typed it in, a lot of travel agents, that's one of their pitch to you. Come to the Valley of Elah and you might pick up the very stone that killed Goliath. I highly doubt it, but that's what it kind of looked like. All right. Yeah, if they keep digging it out, maybe they'd have a really big guy. All right, and that's how this warfare was going to happen. The Philistines on one hill and the army of Israel on the other. The idea is you don't want to tip your hand too early. You don't want to go into the valley too early because you don't want to be fighting uphill. The best way to do the fight is if you could somehow or other get both armies to come into the middle in order to make their battle. Verse 4, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall. Do you have a little text note on 9 feet there? 6 cubits and a span, right? Now, how big is a cubit? A cubit is roughly the length of my arm. Well, that's the reason why it wasn't very accurate, because my arm is probably a little bit bigger than your arm, and but it was roughly 18 inches. That's how they kind of did rough estimations. Now, the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, actually changes it to be 6'9". I don't know. I kind of like 9 feet. Sean, how tall are you? He's 6'6", so add 3 inches to Sean. Garrett, how tall are you? Just under 6'6". So he's got you by the hair. It sticks up a little bit higher. So 3 inches, no offense, Sean, but you're, and I've stood next to you and I'm shorter than you, but I'm not really that intimidated by you with your height. So if you were 6'9", I probably would, and remember Saul, how tall was Saul? He was a head above everyone else. We don't know exactly how tall he was, but you took the tallest Israelite, he was a head taller than the tallest Israelite. So, you know, again, maybe he was 6'2". Maybe he was my height. I don't know. Going up against 6'9 doesn't make much sense. Now, some people then say, how can you have him be that tall? It's impossible. No one grows that big. I think the world record currently of the current living man is 7'11". Oh, it's 8'1"? He grew. Awesome. Oh, there's another guy. Oh, I think he died. The guy from Turkey? Oh, he did? I love you can go on and get a picture of the tallest man with the shortest man. Yeah, that's a great picture, I tell you. And then they've unearthed bones of people that could have been 9 feet tall. But it was all back during a time when circuses were in town. And I don't know. I think 9 feet is reasonable. Yeah, we would. That's what we think. It's really kind of hard to tell. Yeah, but then there's another passage that I think is also really helpful, and that's the passage where they're getting ready to go in the promised land, and they send in the spies to try and find out if they could take the land. And what did the Israelites that returned, well, how did they describe the people in the land? They called them giants. How did they refer to themselves? They said, we're as small as grasshoppers compared to these guys. So, even if they're a little shorter, 6'9", I mean, now if someone was 9 foot tall, that would be impressive. So I'm just telling you my opinion. I think Goliath is 9 feet tall. Also, this dude is very strong. Verse 5. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels, which is approximately 120 pounds. That would be like strapping Mark Thomas onto your back. That would be, because he's about 120 pounds. That would be like strapping, that's a lot. So I think 9 foot seems a little reasonable here. And on his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, which would be about this big. This is a big stick. And its iron point, just the tip, weighed 600 shekels, about 15 pounds. That's just the tip of the spear was 15 pounds. So Goliath was a big boy. And they don't mention, yeah, and he's very strong too, yeah. And they don't mention his shield, but they do mention his shield bearer went ahead of him. And that is kind of what the language depicts, is that he's got somebody that walks in front of him carrying Goliath's shield. I think I'd feel pretty safe. I don't know about you. I'd hide behind the shield and there's Goliath right behind you. I think you're pretty safe in that little spot. But Goliath didn't carry a shield. He had a guy carrying a shield for him. That's kind of the picture. Verse 8. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome and kill him, you will be our subjects and serve us." There is, and I'm going to be weaving this throughout this sermon, there are lots of pictures. This seems to be a really clear picture between the battle of ultimate good versus ultimate evil. This seems to be a picture of a battle between God and Satan. And if that's the case, it is interesting when we talk about Goliath and this taunt that he throws out, we find out at the end of this chapter that Goliath is a liar. And that the Philistine army, because out of curiosity, who wins? You probably know the end of the story, right? David kills Goliath. And at the end of the story, guess what? The Philistines run. No one becomes, they don't say, well, I guess, you know, you won fair and square. I guess we'll become your servants. The devil is a liar. Verse 10. Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." So that was the idea. You would have one person representing the Philistines, one person representing the Israelites, and they'll duke it out for ultimate control. Now, question, where's Saul? Well, I mean, Saul's 6'9". He's a big kid. I don't know, he's not 6'9". He's a big kid. He's tall and big. Why isn't he out in the battle? Well, verse 12. Someone had to wash the laundry or something. I don't know what he was doing. Verse 12. Oh, see, now I got to do this again. Verse 12. My apologies on this. Remember that in Hebrew, very rarely do they tell a story chronologically. Though some people would disagree with me, I believe that chapter 17 chronologically takes place somewhere in chapter 16. And there is a reason why I say that. Because here, and there's going to be other spots too, verse 12, it says, "Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time he was old and well advanced in years." Haven't we already covered this material? Didn't we already do this last week when we talked about the anointing of David as king? That he already had 7 other brothers. David was left out. He was out tending the sheep at the time. He wasn't even able to be counted among the boys. I think that this happens in between, and also there's going to be other stuff that comes in here. And that's just how it was. Do y'all like watching 24? Any 24 fans? Yeah, I'm with you. No one else watches 24? Garrett does? Oh, good. What, are you just scared or something? Like, yes, I like it. 5 years ago, it was much better back then. Anyway, the story of 24 is told from a chronological, real-time story. Now, what they have to do is, in telling the story, they have to jump from character to character and plot line to plot line in order to keep it chronological. And us Americans, we love that. If you were a Jewish person telling the story of 24, you would take Jack Bauer and tell his story all the way through the 24 hours. Then you would go back and get Chloe O'Brien and do that for the 24 hours. Then you'd get that weird-looking Russian dude, and you would track him through the 24 hours, because that's how they like to operate. I want to finish up a story before I go on to the next story. That's how it is. So that's why I have no problem that this probably took place prior to even David's anointing. Very well could be. So it's now describing David in this story. And verse 13, Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. See how that kind of sounds like it's before chapter 6, or in the middle of chapter 16? Because at the end of chapter 16, we have David, who's actually in the service of the king at the temple, or at his palace. Verse 16, for 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Now, Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain, about 22 liters of grain, and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers, and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit." Pizza, I think that's exactly what they're going to make out of this whole thing. Big old pizza party. Now, this would be important because remember, if they're out at a battle and they're standing on a hill and no battle has actually been waged, how are you going to end up eating? You've got to have the families of the warriors are sending food in so that they can eat. And so that's what Jesse's doing. And he tells them, "See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines." So early in the morning, David left the flock with the shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies, ran to the battle lines and greeted his brothers. As he was talking to them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance and David heard it. When the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. I think there's something to be said there, because all too often, Goliath is referred to as a man, as one man, as someone who bleeds, who could be attacked, who could die. This is why, though, I will probably not correct you on the spot, but this is kind of the same thing with the devil. Some people have said to me, Mark, I'm going through a lot of problems right now. The devil is just attacking me. And though I think I understand what you mean by that, I very highly doubt that it is the devil himself doing it. We sometimes get this idea in our head that the devil is everywhere, and the devil is not. The devil is one created being. Though sometimes he may seem very imposing and intimidating, though he might scare the rest of us, he is still just a man created by God. Where am I at? 25. There we go. Now the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. And though we haven't heard it up until now, apparently the king has been giving some rewards if you are able to fight. Because he says, the king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his father's family from taxes in Israel. Now that would be a pretty sweet deal, don't you think? I mean, you could almost hear the king going, all right, whoever kills this guy, I'm going to give him a lot of money. And no one steps forward. If you kill the guy, I'll give you one of my daughters in marriage. I think she was the good-looking one. Okay, I will give to you no taxes. Woo! Yeah. How many of you, you'd be like jumping up and down, like, sign me up, no taxes? You've got to be kidding me. But apparently, no one had yet taken the bait. Verse 26. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the army of the living God? I like David. I like David too. David rocks. They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him this is what will be done for the man who kills him. But this is true of all of us. Anytime you are ready to go and do battle and do something big and great for God, I can pretty much guarantee you that you are going to receive some sort of resistance in some way, shape, or form. The biggest and baddest resistance that usually comes is doubt and disgrace and taunting about your ability. Because that's exactly what happens here to David. He's ready. He's talking about this uncircumcised fellow. Says we should be going and doing something about it. This is crazy. He's defying the armies of the living God. We should do something. And David's older brother chimes up. I don't know if you have an older brother. They are excellent at squashing dreams, are they not? It's true. Chad's over there. Oh, yeah, baby. We all have it. That sometimes our discouragement comes straight from the people that we know and love. Check out what Eliab says. Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men. He burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here, and with whom do you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Now, how would you feel if you were David right at that point? You came, yeah. If you felt small, maybe you would feel just a little bit smaller. You have a little bit. I mean, did he come down just to watch the battle? Why was he there? My dad sent me. Why are you busting my chops? And we don't know if Eliab's words are true. Oftentimes, family members might say things against us or insult us. and maybe take things over the top. Maybe there's a little bit of truth in it. Was David conceited? I don't know. When do you draw the line? Where's the line drawn when you go from confidence to arrogance? That happens all the time, doesn't it? Sometimes people would look at someone who is confident and they'll just think that they're snotty or bratty. They'll see someone that is loving and generous and they'll just say, oh, they're just trying to be a people pleaser. And that happens. So right from the get-go, David gets discouragement. It's something that I've seen so many times, I can't even tell you. I'll do marriage counseling. And as I'm counseling this couple and they say to themselves, you know what? We want to make a go of this. I know that our marriage is in trouble. I know things are bad, but we are going to make it work. And you know what I tell every single couple when they say that? I say, you know what? Sometime this week, something is going to happen that is going to shake your faith in that phrase that you just said. Because it always happens. Take whatever great things that you've wanted to do for God. And I'm thinking of it because, do any of you have anything written at the beginning of chapter 17? Remember 3-4 weeks ago I said, think of something great that maybe God is calling you to do. Think of something big and wonderful that maybe God could use you to do in order to affect His kingdom in a positive way. And I said, take that what you have written and write it at the top of chapter 17. Because we were going to revisit this. And I know what happens. We say, I think God really wants me to do this. And almost immediately I will tell you, you will have people distracting you. You will have people discouraging you. When the Israelites had gone back to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, and they went under the three waves of Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, and they started rebuilding, do you know what happened? There was actually professional discouragers hired by the enemy to go down and tell them, you're not doing that right. No, that's wrong. No, you're not going to win. You're totally going to lose this battle. You're building up the walls. This is ridiculous. You're building up the walls. You're just setting yourself up to be a target. A bunch of people over there ready to fight you. Are you sure you want to do this? Maybe you should reconsider. Do you even have the skills necessary to build a wall? Do you have the skills necessary to even fight off a battle? Do you have the skills necessary to even be here in the land? Weren't you guys just in captivity? And you just got released? You have no standing. You have no ability to be here. And over, that's all they heard. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it. I think we should all learn a lesson from David that essentially, I don't know like this translation. Well, it's as good as we're going to get. Verse 29, now what have I done, said David, can't I even speak? You get this idea of like, dude, why are you doing this? And that's also another great strategy of the devil. The best way to cause Christians to lose in the battle against Satan is all we have to do is start fighting each other. All we have to do is somehow have, well, I don't like this, or I don't like that, or I don't like the way we're doing this, or the color of carpet is really ugly, or Mark, that shirt is way too orange, or Mark, you haven't shaved in a couple of days, you're looking really scruffy and scrunchy. What's wrong with you? And we hear this fighting in between ourselves as opposed to the fighting that should be taking place, which is the Goliath that dare stands against his church and dare stands against any work that we would accomplish through him. Let's turn our fight to the right way. It's Goliath that we should be fighting, not each other. Verse 30, he then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. And the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. That's what's going to happen. Take the dream that you have. And someone's going to say, you can't do it. Now, if you are one of those rare breeds, I happen to be one of those, the fastest way to get me to do something is tell me that I can't do it, and then I'll prove to you that I can actually do it. I don't know, I just wired that way. But for a lot of us, we hear that, and we believe it. No, you can't do that. No, you can't talk to your parents about Christianity. They're going to laugh at you. No, you can't start a church. You don't have the right skills necessary. No, you can't go fight that Goliath. You're just one person. You're not going to make any difference whatsoever. So even Saul is harping on poor David. And he says, you're only a boy, and he has been a fighting man from his youth. Now this paragraph tells us exactly how scrappy, how strong, how amazing this little boy named David is. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it and struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. How would you like to be able to... That's pretty good. A lion comes, carries off one of the sheep. You show up at Mr. Lion's den. You punch Mr. Lion in the mouth. Grab the sheep, start walking away. Mr. Lion is upset and decides he's going to eat you up, you turn, grab it by its head, and kill it with your bare hands. David is, and he says the same thing about a bear. I killed a bear with my bare hands when I was only, no wait, another story. yeah, that is another David, isn't that? Yeah, I never really realized that. This is going to be another thing that's important. Because through this story, you can possibly take it into an extreme that might be unhealthy. Question, does David have a lot of courage? Yes. Does courage win the day? No. I would like to. I think I could probably whip you guys up into a frenzy and talk about courage and boldness and strength for God. And I could just excite you about hundreds and thousands of things. And I could say, all you need is courage and boldness. But that's not... You could get that if you read 1 Samuel 17. But read the rest of the Bible, might not be the same case. Israelites, perfect example, show up in the Promised Land, and they're going to go and battle the big and mighty Jericho. And what do they all say? That's too big. That's too bad. There is no way we're going to do it. Even a couple of people are like, where's the map? Back to Egypt? Can we go back? I don't think this is a good idea. Did they have any courage whatsoever? Did they win against Jericho? Yes. Yes. The next battle they went into, they had all the courage in the world. They looked at this puny little town named Ai, and they're like, we could take it. In fact, let's not even send the whole army. We'll just choose about 1,000 of our best guys. They're big enough. They're strong enough. We have all the courage. We have all the confidence in the world that God's going to deliver this into our hands. We believe this is it. And they go down and they lose. It's not about how much courage you have. It's about, is God with you? It also has nothing to do with your skill set. Here's a great example. I think David possibly could have killed Goliath on his own. If David could go up against a bear and a lion and kill it with his bare hands, like I said last week, I think that if you would have just said, David, go out and kill him and don't think about this God stuff, I think David would have run out, somehow jumped under his legs, got on his back, ripped off his helmet, pulled open his skull, take out his brains, and watch him fall to the ground. That's just my opinion, because David was that kind of guy. He had all the skills necessary. He had all the ability necessary. But all through this, you're going to find something very important. David says, my skill, my strength, my power, my courage, they come from one place and one place only, and that's God. You find other times when people say, I don't have the skills. Moses, you're going to be the deliverer for the people of Israel in Egypt, and you are going to speak to them. And he goes, I can't talk. And there's going to be times that maybe God stretches your faith and brings you into a situation where you feel completely and utterly inadequate in what you're doing, but that's not the point. It's not whether you are skilled in it or unskilled, whether you have all of the necessary powers or not. The most important thing is God with you? Have all the courage in the world, or be as scared as can be. As long as God is with you, that's the key. And that's what he says. Verse 36. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Do you get that? He could have said, dude, I've killed lion, I've killed bear, I could take this guy. But he goes, you know what? God delivered me from the hand of the lion and the paw of the bear. He can do the exact same thing now. Saul said to David, go and may the Lord be with you. And we don't know how he said that, like, dude, you're an idiot. Okay, fine. Have at it. Go and may the Lord be with you. It's your funeral, my friend. I don't know. It's tough to tell. Verse 38. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. This kind of a humorous little thing. Maybe it didn't fit because I think Saul's too big, or just the fact that he was using someone else's materials. And that's important too. It's church adultery what happens all too often when I get those little brochures in the mail. Come to North Point Community Church, where we have reached millions of people for Jesus Christ. And come and we will give you the 5 steps to transform your church to be like our church. And people flock and they get the 5 steps and then they come back and they don't become the big giant church. I think there is something to be said about using wisdom from other people and seeing what works and what doesn't work in terms of the kingdom of God. But I get very nervous that sometimes we might get discouraged just because something worked somewhere else and doesn't work with us. I don't know if it's a true study or not, but I read about it, the study of the monkeys. They took 5 monkeys, and they put a thing of bananas on the top of the pole of the thing, and the monkeys all started running up the pole, and once they hit the pole, they were shot with water, sprayed really hard, and all the monkeys freaked out and left. And they did that a couple of times until finally the 5 monkeys, they're not going to touch the banana. So then they take one of the monkeys out and put a monkey in that has never experienced said water spray from the pole. And said monkey looks up at the pole and goes, the banana's up there. And he starts to go up when all the other 4 monkeys starts grabbing. First monkey said, don't go up there, that's a bad thing. And then they take another monkey out. And then another monkey until there was no monkeys left that had ever been sprayed with water. And none of them would go up there because they had just heard from the past, don't do it, it's just a bad idea. And I think that's how we are also. We look at other churches and we say, gosh, we should do it the way they're doing it. Or you know what, they failed in this, so we would fail in that. Why don't we do something different and just ask what God would want us to do? And that's how David was. I don't know how to use this weapon. This stuff doesn't fit me. Be very careful about using the armor of another person. Instead, be praying, what does God want from me in my life? And that's what he says. So I'm in the middle of verse 39. I cannot go on these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand approached the Philistine. I've heard all the stories of the 5 smooth stones. Some people say David didn't have enough faith. Shouldn't he have just taken 1? I've heard some people say Goliath had 4 brothers. And so it was 1 for each, like, oh, I'll kill you and now I'm going to come out with your brothers. Is it possible that he picked up 5 smooth stones because he just reached down and grabbed a handful of rocks? I don't know. Maybe that's just stupid. Yes, Alex. It could have been he was being wise. So many people do all these things David, I have to admit, I really do like the whole Goliath had 4 brothers thing, because that sounds really cool. But what if he was just, you're running down in the battlefield, what are you going to do? I got a sling, reach down, grab some stones, put it in your bag. I don't know. Or maybe he picked up five to go after the brothers. Or, I don't know. Maybe that's what's always worked in the past. We've always done it this way. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, Diane. Yeah, yeah, we do sometimes. Yeah, we get that, don't we? We're gonna do something great for God. Oh, here, can I use? I'll use Lynn Moore as a great example. Do you remember when we started, Lynn? When we started the homeless ministry at Wednesday nights, the very first Tara, I think you even brought a bunch of food to that one. Yeah, Tara brought a whole bunch of food, and we're like, we're gonna minister to the homeless people. We're gonna invite them to come. We're gonna feed them with this big meal, and it's gonna be awesome. And then we're gonna give them a Bible study. And we're gonna talk to them about the Word of God. And guess how many people showed up to that very first study? Zero, not a nobody. And it could have been really easy for Lynn to go, okay, well, oh well. But Lynn had this tenacity saying, no, no, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep trying. Because sometimes I'm not going to work. Doesn't mean that God is going to then not do it again. Yeah. So, five smooth stones. I'm not going to give you a long sermon on why five. I think he just grabbed five. That's my personal opinion. I could be totally wrong. There we go. Verse 41. Meanwhile, the Philistine with his shield bearer in front of him. Again, isn't this an unfair fight? Goliath has someone carrying his shield. Kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. Have you ever, like you're too good looking to be a warrior. You are a pretty boy. You're obviously ruddy, which means you're white, which means you're probably an indoors kid, though he was a shepherd and outside quite often. He had that complexion that I don't care how long you stay outside, you're still going to be white. It's just the way it is. And in those days, if that's the way you looked, then did you just point at Dawn? Oh, you pointed at Patrick. Okay, yeah. Patrick, he's ruddy. Look at his cheeks. He's ruddy. You could probably be outdoors for 20 hours, and you'll still be white. And it's the way it is. So the Philistine, Goliath, is thinking he's an indoor kid, and he despises him. And that actually tells you something really kind of cool about the enemy, is that the enemy seems to always underestimate God's people. I don't think that the devil underestimates God. I really don't. I think when the devil looks at God, he cowers, and he's in fear. But something that he always seems to underestimate is God's people. Job being the greatest example. Came to God and said, yeah, Job, he's rich, he's got lots of money, and you know what? The only reason why he likes you is because you've given him lots of stuff. I bet if you took all the stuff away, he would curse you. And that was the devil saying, I don't believe in your people. Do you know that the devil does not believe in you? He does not think you are worth anything. He will constantly underestimate you, which is really cool for us. Verse 43. So he said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his own gods. Wow. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. So now Goliath is saying, I'm going to hack you up. And birds are going to eat you. David said to the Philistine, this is one of those things that if we were shooting a movie, this is when we'd start the music, you know, like Independence Day when we're about ready to go battle the aliens, you know, and Bill Pullman, the president, has to give that speech, and he's going to stand up there, or like Mel Gibson in Braveheart, and he's gonna rally the troops. That's kind of what I see here with David. Of course, one pastor thinks he had a squeaky voice, which would be really hilarious. You come at me with sword and spear. You know, I don't know. He may not have gone through puberty yet. He was a young kid. You come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give all of you into our hands. Woo! I kind of get that. And if I was shooting that, that's when I would have everyone start clapping. It's appropriate at that point, You get kind of jazzed up there, don't you? You're like, yeah! Oh. Yes, Alex. There's a big difference between movies and real life. Because there's David, however tall. There's Goliath, 9 feet. He's got a sword, a spear, armor. He's covered from head to toe. And David's got a staff and a sling. This is a fair fight. Yeah. It is one thing to say that we're bold and confident in God, but wait till you get in front of that monster. Then it gets a little different, doesn't it? But David, again, didn't say, you know what, I can take him. And I think that's an important thing when you go through life. I've heard it said that God will never give you more than you can handle. And I think that's a lie. I think God will regularly give you more than you can handle, because it's not about what you can or cannot accomplish. It's about what can God do. And that's what you hear it all through this. David saying it's not going to be me that fights. It's going to be God that does this. That's the mirror. Verse 48. This is a cool little point in the story. It has no theological significance, but it does tell you exactly what David thinks. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. That's good, isn't it? Here comes giant is now running at you full bore. I might have gone, I think I can squeeze off a couple of shots. I'm going to back up just a little bit. Where's the brook? I'm going to stay close because I might have to fire 3-4 shots off. Here, but you know what David does? He starts running at a full sprint towards Goliath. I just got to love it. It's a great story. Reaching into his bag and taking out his stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell face down on the ground, smashing that poor shield bearer. No, I don't know. It doesn't actually say. What happened to the poor shield bearer? Like, dude, help! Can you get me off this? Just so you know, that word sank actually is used quite often in terms when it's used with liquid. Like if I dropped a stone into a brook and it sank into the image that the person is trying to convey is not that it like hit them and it, and then I'm dazed and then I fall down. I don't know. I think blood started. Yeah, I think it maybe looked like the Matrix. It sinks into his forehead. I don't know how good of a shot David is in regular circumstances. I don't know if you set up a couple of beer cans and gave David 5 smooth stones, could he hit all 5? I really don't know. Some pastors said David is a great shot. And sitting out there with those sheep all those years, he probably got really good at swinging those stones. Others say there is no way that you can take that shot and actually hit it. This is Luke Skywalker going down that little thing, and he has got to get that thermal exhaust port and hit it. And though at one point in the movie, he said, well, yeah, we used to bullseye womp rats, so we could hit that, but it doesn't rely on his own skill. He relied on the Force. Yes, Jim. Yeah, you're definitely going to get a little bit more accurate with a polished stone, with a smooth stone. But I'm telling you, I don't know. Whether David was a good shot or a bad shot, I am convinced 100% that God helped direct that stone in the right way to hit exactly where it needed to hit. Isn't it interesting? Someone pointed out, I thought it was fascinating, that the writer of 1 Samuel spends more time describing the armor of Goliath than he does with the actual battle. It's almost as if this battle is so anticlimactic. And he took a stone, slung it, and it sang his forehead, and he fell down. That's it. It's done. It's over. Verse 50, so David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone without a sword in his hand. He struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He did make a promise. What was his promise? I'm going to chop off your head. Off with his head. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the scabbard. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. I think it is true, as we take a look at what would this mean if we were talking spiritually, it seems to work quite nicely. When you talk about Jesus Christ, he is from the line of David, the shepherd, and there seems to be a couple of parallels in there. David was sent by his father, just as Jesus was sent by his father. David was despised by his brothers and mocked and ridiculed. He conquered Goliath, Satan, with unconventional means. And in the New Testament, I'm sorry I don't have the passage up, but in the New Testament, Paul notes that by death, he conquered death, as if taking the very weapon that had been used to strike fear in the heart of people, by that very instrument, he wins. Because up until then, anyone conquered death? Had a couple people resurrected, but then they ended up, which would really stink to die twice. I mean, I'm thinking dying once would be bad. A couple people translated up into heaven. But no one had been able to conquer death. And along comes God, and he conquers death by dying. That is really cool. And so when the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Verse 52, then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sherim road to Gath and Ekron. And when the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. And so the promise was kept. And I'm going to take out every one of your army as well. Verse 54 is morbidly cool. Isn't it? David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem, and he put the Philistine's weapon in his own tent. I guess we do it nowadays. We mount stuff on the wall, you know, bigger kills that we have. But that's what David does. He's carrying this head around with him. And personally, I don't know, because they didn't have, well, I guess they embalmed it in some way, but after a while, what would happen to that head? But that would be really cool to say, look at this. Look at this giant. And you know what? That's something that we always need to remember, because you guys are going to face a lot of stuff in your life. You're going to face sickness and disease, death and heartbreak. You are going to face loss of jobs and ultimately loss of life. But there's one thing you need to remember, and that is the Philistine's head has still been chopped off. Satan has still been defeated. Evil may still have a time, but ultimately, God wins. Verse 55, here is proof positive that I think that, not think, here is proof of the fact that the Hebrew people would like to finish stories before going back and inserting more details. Because look at what it says. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine. So do you see we just now have a little flashback? So the story is technically over, but now they need to make sure and fill in more details. And so they go and say, oh yeah, while David was running out, we're going to tell a new story. If we were shooting this cinematography by cinema, we would have this conversation in the middle of it. Here the Hebrews put it at the end of the story, after David has killed him. So that's why I believe that it seems to be that this is a story that took place within chapter 16. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, Abner, whose son is that young man? Which would also make sense, because in chapter 16, wasn't David brought to the palace of Saul? And didn't he play harp for him? And yeah, he should know his own harp player, but okay, maybe there's lots of musicians and, you know, can't keep them all straight. But this seems kind of odd that he doesn't know. Some people then say, well, he's looking for his pedigree because he's now got to give his daughter in marriage. I don't know. I just think the easiest way to read this is that David and Saul have not yet really become acquainted. It's a personal opinion. A lot of people believe with me, but a lot of people believe just, you know. Abner replied, as surely as you live, O king, I do not know. The king said, find out whose son this young man is. As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, so flash forward, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with David still holding the Philistine's head. Isn't that awesome? King, you needed me? Like, I would carry it around. It was probably pretty heavy, but that would be a great little trophy. I'm going to carry this sucker wherever I go to remember. I think we sometimes need to, I think we kind of do this if you have a cross around your neck. I'm hoping that you wear a cross around your neck, not because it's beautiful and pretty and shines in the sunlight, but I hope you take a moment and look at it and go, that's Goliath's head right there. Death has been conquered. So here's David walking around, Philistine head. Whose son are you, young man? Saul asked him, and David said, I am the son of your servant, Jesse of Bethlehem. Everything about this story that you believed is true. God still conquers evil through people like you and me, whether we are short or tall, skilled or unskilled, courageous or uncourageous. God still uses us for great battles. The question is, I fear we're not even walking out to the battle line. I fear that we're just not doing anything. I fear that we're sitting there shouting a lot and screaming and taunting, but when do we actually do stuff? I want us to be attacking, going out and fighting, courageously winning the battle. I pray that whatever you wrote there on the top of 17 is something that you start looking at more. Start praying now, Lord, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to live? How shall I live for you and do all that you've called me to do? Let's pray. Lord God, thank you that by death you conquered death. Thank you that you are stronger than any Goliath we face. Thank you that we can trust in you, and that we can be confident that if you're with us, we can face anything. Lord, help us to be bold and confident. And if we're not, Lord, then give us that courage. Give us that strength. And Lord, whatever things you have done in the past through us, use us now for your glory. Use us now for whatever great things you would have us do. And I pray that by your strength, by your spirit, and by the armies of the living God, we would be able to overcome all through you. And we look forward to ultimately coming back home to you. And that someday, even when we die, we will be victorious and be able to be with you forever. We praise and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.